Medical Education Podcast listeners, this is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief again, coming to you from a wonderful fall that we're experiencing here in Vancouver. And I have the pleasure today of speaking with Esther Helmich, who is a elderly care physician in the Netherlands and also working as a medical teacher at Radboud University in Nijmegen. Esther, particularly fortunate to speak with right now because it gives me a chance to celebrate the completion of her PhD, which is taking place in about a week, I understand. So first and foremost, Esther, congratulations on seeing the end of what I'm sure has been quite a bit of work.
Thank you very much.
It's exciting and I'm sure a little bit intimidating all at the same time. We've decided to talk because of a paper that you have coming out in Medical Education in the November 2012 issue. It's entitled Being in Medicine for the First Time, Emotional Talk, Meaning, and Identity Development. One of the reasons I was intrigued about this paper is this concept of identity development or professional identity seems to have really taken hold in the last few years and become quite a hot topic in professional education with a lot of people looking into various aspects of it. So I can easily understand why it would have been an attractive area to work in. I'm wondering, for the sake of those who don't work in this area, if you could tell our listeners a little bit about what you mean by professional identity and why it's become such an important topic for us.
I think becoming a doctor is, well, more than just gaining expertise, gaining knowledge and skills, but it's also about being able to connect to people, being able to talk to others, to handle emotions of other people, but also to handle your own emotions, to know what you're doing, what's medicine about. So it's important not just to have those skills and knowledge, but also to have a firm sense of self and of professional responsibility, of professional behavior. And well, of course, it's difficult to give a clear-cut definition of professional identity, I think. The core subject, I think, is that sense of self, sense of what it is about to be a good doctor. It tricked my interest when I started working as a medical teacher, working with very young medical students. In the Netherlands, we have medical students entering medical school at an age of 18 on average. So these are very young people entering quite a new field for them and aspiring to become medical doctors, but not knowing right at that moment what it might mean. And I saw them entering medical practice in the first year. We have those early clinical experiences, and they were just looking around, whoa, what's going on here? What's happening? How do I need to react to all those impressive experiences, to all those emotions? And I saw them struggling with everything that they were confronted with, and saw them looking for how to build it into a sense of their future self. And I think that triggered my interest in identity development and more or less describes what means professional identity to me in this context of early medical education.
Right. These seemed like deliberate activities then? When you say you were observing people's reactions to these early clinical experiences, am I right in interpreting you as saying that they seem to use those intentionally to help them form their development, or is this more a natural process that people don't have much awareness of?
I think it's more a natural process by which people, well, might be overwhelmed instead of being able to deliberately go through it, because they are not prepared for what's going to happen. And what I saw was that there were many differences between students, how they were able to handle what was happening. So some students are able to react in more or less deliberate ways and to deliberately try to find other experiences and just learn through it and build it into a future identity. But other people are more or less overwhelmed by everything that's happening, and then it's not deliberate at all, it's only surviving. But I think apart from this, for most people, it will be a kind of natural process, entering medical practice for the first time and seeing all those people working together and meeting patients and talking to patients. And by just participating within that community of practice or on the ward, people will gain some idea of what it means to become a doctor.
Right, and you mentioned the word emotion. The training to become a doctor is obviously a very emotional activity, in both negative and positive emotions, and fairly extreme emotions in some cases. How central a role is emotion in the clinical experiences that you're describing?
It's highly important. I think maybe it's central to what is happening in two ways, maybe. On the one hand, emotional experiences will elicit ideas about how to react to them, how to deal with them, what it means to be the patient, what it means to be ill or knowing you're going to die or something like that. And on the other hand, being in medicine and becoming a doctor is also a highly emotional process. So I think it's, well, there's a two-way relationship in which salient emotional experiences will have profound implications for medical students' development. And I think that holds for both positive and negative emotions. I think, in general, emotions are highly under-recognized in medical research. If there are interests into the role of emotions, then mostly it's about negative emotions, like feeling exhausted or burnt out or stressed or things like that. But there are also many really positive emotions that are very helpful for medical students' identity development, such as feeling rewarded, feeling high interest in what's happening, or developing relationships with patients, a very positive experience. I think that's not gaining the interest it deserves right at this moment.
And your contribution to this literature involved going out and interviewing medical students who were on attachment with nurses in hospitals and nursing homes. And I don't want to go too far into the methodological details because people can read about that, but the variety of medical school learning environments that you could have considered, was there a reason that you decided to focus on that particular area?
There are two reasons. One pragmatic reason is that we have those students in those nursing attachments in hospitals and nursing homes, and I was really interested in what's happening there and if there would be any difference between, for example, the hospital and the nursing home as a learning environment. So that was one of the starting points of my PhD project. I think with respect to this paper, it really makes sense to look at students on a nursing attachment, particularly when attached to nurses and when participating in patient care as an assistant nurse. Students are coming really close to patients. They're not distracted by having to know everything or to learn how to use the stethoscope or to impress the supervisor with all their medical knowledge. It's just about connecting to patients, talking with them, listening to them, and getting to know what it means for a patient to be there. So it's easier for medical students to stay close to their personal development. And in the Netherlands, and particularly in Nijmegen, we think it's quite important to have those students on those early clinical attachments in this role, so attached to nurses, because then they will be focused on communication, empathy, personal development, more than on developing medical expertise. That will be possible in the clerkships and afterwards. But in this first clinical placement, we would like to emphasize particularly this aspect of becoming a good doctor.
Right, okay. And so you interviewed these individuals one-on-one using a phenomenological perspective, I understand. Can you give our listeners a bit of a sense as to what phenomenology entails?
Yeah, phenomenology is about getting insight into the lived experiences of participants, which of course is always something you're striving for when you're doing qualitative research or using interviewing methods. Phenomenology in particular, not building a model or gaining insight into all the different aspects of the phenomenon of the study, but really trying to get quite close to the personal experiences of the participants, medical students in this situation.
I can imagine those personal experiences being quite variable, and one of the efforts you appear to have made in conducting this work is to see if there's some taxonomy or some set of different types of lived experiences. I wonder if you can tell us a bit about that categorization scheme that you came up with.
I think one of the main aims of phenomenological studies might be that you're looking for patterns or profiles or some similarities within the high variety in personal experiences. And one of the ways you can do that in phenomenology is looking at paradigm cases, looking into the data or within your interviews with the students at what is the central experience of the students and how they differ, but also where students' experiences resemble each other. And within this research project, I was able to identify four paradigm cases that differ from each other in how they experience and display their emotions, how they were able to adjust to the environment or stay critical towards it, and how they were able to find a new role as a medical student on the ward or future medical doctor, and how they were able to participate on the ward at this moment, so not in the future, but in this moment, were able to participate in patient care. I think dimensions, students were different on those dimensions, and this resulted in the identification of those four paradigms, which are students that are mostly overwhelmed by everything that's happening. They're feeling really uncertain and are afraid to be too large a burden. They interpret their experiences as really fearful and difficult and try to avoid the confrontation with real life. So that in these students' identity development is really limited because they are too scared by everything. The second group of students, I call them complying. They remain largely detached and are commenting predominantly on structural and procedural aspects. They are just trying to stick to the rules, not being critical, not experiencing many emotions, but just trying to be obedient. So the students are largely foreclosed in their identity development. And you have those students who are really exploring what is happening in practice, developing themselves, consciously reflecting on their feelings of uncertainty, and the students are feeling uncertain but are able to ask for help and support. And I think these students are really creating developmental space to develop their own personalities, their own professional identities. And we had the students who are actively participating and who had the most mature identity status, contributing actively to patient care and recognizing, shaping their own learning activities and opportunities. So these are four student profiles representing all those different experiences of medical students. And I think this is one of the possible results of a phenomenological study, that you have those four paradigms that more or less represent the experiences also of other students.
Right. And do you see these four paradigms as a hierarchy of development almost? I'm wondering, in terms of the implications of having done this work, is your hope that by better understanding it, you'll be able to help students move from the insecure end up to the participating end, or are they simply different experiences without one necessarily being better than another?
Well, I think there are important differences. These are four student types. I don't think per definition one thing is better than the other, but I think it has some important implications for medical education, and I think then it's most important to give them enough space to develop themselves and to have all the experiences they are looking forward to, and just to stimulate them and give them space to do it. But in particular, the really insecure and the complying students are probably problematic students, and it might be really important to identify them in an early stage of medical education, because then we might be able to give them additional supervision or remediation trees. In particular, the complying students, I think that's the most problematic group, who's quite foreclosed in their identity development. They are not open to new experiences, they're just critiquelessly trying to stick to the rules. And I think that's not the way we want to educate medical doctors. We would like to educate people who are able to reflect critically on what's happening, on their own behaviors, on the behaviors of others. And this group is not able to do that. So then we should put extra effort into this group, or maybe take this into account in selection and admission procedures early in medical school. I think the insecure group, I meet them very often in medical education as a medical teacher, and I think for those students it might be really helpful to be identified early in medical education, although that's confronting for them. But then they might be supported by some extra supervising trajectories, which might help them to develop into the exploring identity type or eventually the participating identity type. So I think it's important to recognize those paradigms as profiles to attune supervision to it.
My last question was going to be how this work or engaging in these projects has influenced you as a teacher. I think you largely just gave a response to that answer, but is there anything else you'd like to say with respect to how you might have changed your practices as an educator as a result of now knowing what you've learned through this?
Well, I think I really learned a lot from it, because being involved so closely in the stories of medical students helped me become more sensible to what's happening to them. So I think now I'm looking at students when I have them on placements in a nursing home. I'm looking at them wondering what kind of student this might be, what type, what profile he or she might fit. So I think that has changed my way of supervising students, being more conscious of what the one student might need or another might not need. So I think in particular the insecure people, of course, then you're trying to give them some more support, but also the very good functioning students, I'm able to give them more space to do things on their own right now. But even more important, what I think has really changed is that I'm far more conscious of all those things that are highly emotional for the students. And when you're working as a medical doctor for a long time yourself, then you kind of lost this consciousness. When a patient dies, I am used to it because I have seen many patients dying. But for some students, very first time, they will have this experience. And since from the moment on, I have been working on this project, I am far more aware of medical students' emotions in this kind of situations. So I will always ask them, what's going on? What's happening? What do you feel? What do you think? What does this mean? And I think that has really changed within my way of supervising students. It has been quite helpful.
Yeah, that's great. It sounds like it's been quite impactful. And as you said, there are a number of implications that might consider even further moving forward. So let me just end by congratulating you, not only again on this particular work, but on your PhD that this has contributed to. Congratulations on reaching that stage.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And I'll just remind those who've been listening that I've been speaking with Esther Helmich. The paper we've been discussing is going to be in the November 2012 issue of Medical Education, entitled Being in Medicine for the Very First Time, Emotional Talk, Meaning, and Identity Development. Appreciate your time, Esther, and we'll look forward to seeing what comes next from you.
Hopefully. Thank you.
My pleasure.